Hey everybody, welcome to See You on the Trail. My name's Hitch, and as always, I have my co-host here with me, Mr. Seth Brown. What's going on, buddy?
Hello everybody, just having fun, I guess.
Yeah, this is we're a little late on the podcast. There's, I understand, I tried to tell you guys I would do better next time, but there's two guys standing over here. You might know them, you might not. Introduce yourselves.
Justin Ramsey.
Brian Trotter.
Brian Trotter, what are you guys here to? What are you guys here for?
I guess we're going to talk off-road stuff.
Sounds
pretty
good.
Pretty much all we really
like,
enjoy.
So. Like hiking and camping, or
well, depends
sometimes
on whether
they turn
or not you break
hikes.
Down. Yeah. I mean, if you're there, if you happen to break your shit and you're there all night, then you might hike and you might camp.
A little while. Valid point. Yeah.
Where would you? Where do you think you would get? Stuck at or break down, where would that be?
Well, you know, on the crossbar there's a few holes here and there.
Okay, so crossbar, you're bringing that up now. Let's talk about it. You guys are the two owners of Crossbar Ranch there in Davis, Oklahoma, right?
Yes, sir.
Cool deal. Tell us more about the ranch. Well, tell us where it is first.
We're actually just south of here, about an hour. We're at exit 55 on I-35, right outside of Davis, Oklahoma.
You're on the west side of
I 35.
Down DeLisi Road?
Down DeLisi Road. Take the exit 55, Bedray Chocolate Factory, and go west and go out there a mile and head south down into the mountains. So we've got 6,500 acres of sheer off road bliss.
Wow.
Make sure you stop at Bedray and get the chocolate covered potato chips. Those are my favorite.
Duly noted.
Yeah. Have you never done that?
I have not.
Oh, yeah. They used to be in a can, just like Pringles cans. Now they're in like a bag and they're a little bit different. I don't know if maybe they were actually using Pringles and they got in trouble. I don't know, but they're chocolate dipped potato chips and milk chocolate and dark chocolate, yeah. And it's got that salty chocolate flavor, yeah. You know.
Escargot with chips.
Yes. So definitely worth it.
Yeah. Guys, we have problems with the cat again.
Yeah,
sorry, right. We apologize.
At least it's not my dog tinkering around this time.
Well, I mean, let's kind of sit back and talk about you guys individually. Brian, tell us where you came from, where you grew up, and what kind of history you got.
Without breaking any international treaties or anything like that.
Oh, sure. I'm not allowed in a couple of countries, but fortunately this one I'm all right with.
Okay.
But I graduated high school and Stillwater, Oklahoma, and then kind of farted off, went and did some ski bum stuff up in Colorado, and then went up to Alaska for a couple of summers and decided one morning I was going to do something besides be a ski bum and an Alaska guy. So went in the Navy, did 20 years there, and then through that and the training that I was able to attend, got to know some guys in the off-road industry, so end up making a couple of friendships there, and then end up spending about 18 years out in Virginia, and then last 2 years as a desk monkey. I got the Navy to move me out to Coronado, and then I could see Baja from the office. So
that's awesome.
So I walk out, and then the day I retired was literally we started prepping for Hammers in 2015. So
who were you prepping to go to Hammers with?
Ricky Johnson.
Okay.
Yep, and Luke Johnson. So we had two of the spec cars at the time. So
yeah, I forgot that Ricky Johnson was running the one of the spec cars at the time.
Yep. So that was pretty cool to be a part of because that's the first time Luke actually beat his dad in a legitimate race. And so it was kind of the passing of the torch moment.
And now, can you tell everybody? Quickly, I guess we don't need to go down the rabbit hole, but who Luke and Ricky Johnson are?
So if you followed any kind of motocross riding back in the day, and the old school guy, so actually funny segue side story is that being from Stillwater, Guy Cooper was man back in, you know, he's a local guy.
Okay.
Back in the day, like I bought my first motorcycle from Guy Cooper's mom. I was like, man, there goes Guy Cooper, that's awesome. Well, fast forward to, I won't name the year, but Guy got his ass handed to him by this Ricky Johnson guy. And I was like, that son of a bitch, Ricky Johnson. So fast forward to we're gearing up to get to go over to Afghanistan, and we had mobility problems at the time. We were trying to sort out. It's like, all right, well, dirt bikes, we need dirt bikes.
Mm-hmm.
Taliban are running around on bikes, so let's get some dirt bike training. call my warrant officer buddy out on the West Coast at the time and said, hey, you know, who are you guys using for motorcycle training? He goes, this guy named Ricky Johnson. Have you ever heard of him? I'm like, that son of a bitch. So
he beat my buddy back in the day.
I'm going to have some words with him. So anyway, sent some of my crew out there, and they came back, said nothing but good things about the program, about what the Ricky had put on. So I went out and observed the training, and then kind of wrote up another basically a white paper on why that platform is legitimate for certain theaters and where we're operating in, and then just kind of struck a friendship with Ricky. And then he calls up one day, is like, hey, thinking about running the hammers and spec truck, and would you know pull winch line for me? And I was like, fuck yeah, let's go do this. So
okay,
sweet.
Fast forward to we crossed the line, and after five flats and eight winches.
Oh, that's just a day at the hammer.
Broke winch line, yeah. But
so is that going some back kind of to personal record?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't get a flat when I did.
So, what is your experience off road prior to that? Besides, you know, I guess situations combat related.
Well, I mean, I like to tell people my off road career started in Kosovo, then
okay,
kind of worked over to Iraq and then Afghanistan, but. I've probably been to enough driving schools off-road or and on-road that it's probably illegal that I was able to go to so many. But
yeah,
so your it sounds like to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, is your experience off-roading did not start recreationally.
No, not really.
So you kind of maybe developed an interest in it and then found some friends that were doing it, and you just dropped right into one of the biggest theaters of it.
Right, exactly.
All right.
Yep. So when we drove, or Ricky had called up the following year for, it was 16, Justin Matney with the RBM truck number four had called Ricky and was like, hey, you know, could we split duties in this year's Baja? And he said, hell yeah, I'm bringing my Navigator. So Ricky calls me and he's like, hey, we're a number four truck, and I'm like, fuck yeah, we are, because at the time, it was the first all-wheel drive trophy truck. And so I fly out to Phoenix and start helping prep the truck and get it ready. Then we go up to SEMA for the qualifying, and then qualified, you know, second, according to that at that time. But
right.
But there's some disputes there. But
There's always disputes.
But we end up, got around as a LeDuc at the time. Got around him, and we were leading the thousand, and everything was beautiful, everything was great. And I swear, every red light on that dash that could come on came on. So I was having power issues. Alternator one was dying. They were running dual alternators, so MoTeC was getting confused. So I'm doing everything that I could to save the truck while racing.
Right.
Like a bunch of black tape over all the red lights.
Yeah. And I put Ricky on ice late because I'm on HF comms out to the chase team that I could touch, and then we at that time we had some sat comms going
and
on.
And he doesn't need to hear all that.
He doesn't need to hear that, but he was very curious as to all my chatter on my side of the truck, trying to keep this thing.
Why are you talking so much? I don't hear anything. Yeah. What's going on? Dude, just drive.
Yeah, so I'm like, shut up, Ricky. Do some of that driving shit. So yeah, G ended up killing over dying on us. That we're out in front, it's beautiful, and then we got to race mile 318, and that's when both batteries are shut down. So go from the hell yeah, we're number one in Baja, we are leading the pack, to and we're going in a section that we'd pre-run, but we're going to walk away from them just because of four-wheel drive at the time. Then go from that peak to, you know, all right, it's time to
somebody come.
I guess we're camping, so I go into building a fire, and Ricky's over there kind of running through his, you know.
You very quickly went from racing to overland.
Yeah, we went to camping and hiking. So it was all
should
good.
We spoon?
Yeah, not cold yet.
No, I actually
I'd already called.
I actually
spoon,
do have so. A. I won't. I'm not going to bring it up right now. Time wise, there is a story of some Texas racers with them spooning at the hammers because they were so remote to get them out. They ended up lighting a fire with whatever they had and spooning with each other, and then when the guys from the tribe pulled up to get them out, they found them like spooning to try to keep warm on the trail.
I believe that's the way that trail got named, too. Spooner's.
It might be a different situation when that was named, but it was something like that.
But now, the next guy, Justin, man, give us the same rundown. Where'd you come from, and what brought you to Crossbar Ranch?
Just a country boy from Lone Grove, Oklahoma. And
Lone Grove. And I bet you anybody that's not from that area is Googling that. Where is Lone Grove, so why is it the only grove there?
Well, that's a good question. We're about 30 miles north of the border, just outside of Ardmore. So we're just a little subsidiary of Ardmore, and grew up there. Family was, parents are divorced, so I kind of had a diverse background. I had a dad that was, we farmed and all of that, but he also liked dune buggies, so that's what I learned how to drive in. Got my first to, went on two wheels on a JR50 when I was five.
And, let me guess that, Little Sahara?
No, just in the pasture. We always had land, and so grew up running around on the dirt, and my stepdad was a horse guy, so I was kind of in between engines and horses all the time, and just loved the outdoors, and have done other things in life. Had other careers, a financial advisor for 16 years, had a restaurant down in Ardmore, and really hated both of those. Crossbar was the place that I went and recreated, and just the place I enjoyed, and my cell phone didn't work there, so I liked it.
It's good news.
So as a financial planner, do you suggest becoming a part of a off-road park financially?
Well, neither that nor the restaurant business.
Yeah, really, it's a great write-off. Like, you can write off a lot. Like,
Everything's a write-off.
not expenses, just everything in your life.
All I'm thinking is there's going to be some kid like, oh, he was a financial planner and he went into an off-road park. I know what I'm doing with my life. And you're like, that's not the route you should go.
No, absolutely. It was more of a, I just decided that I didn't want to do that anymore, and sold it and walked away. It was a great career course for me for the time, and learned a lot, but just wasn't my thing. And just the off-road and outdoors, I always dreamed, like I said, I learned how to drive in a dune buggy, and always couldn't read very good, so my dad would give me, I still can't.
We sound out a lot of things.
I'm not a real financial advisor, but now my dad would give me his Volkswagen magazines. He was a big Volkswagen fanatic, and I started reading about the Baja when I was just a little kid, and always dreamed if I was ever going to do any kind of racing, it would be Baja, and couldn't figure that out, so I wanted to put on a race at Crossbar to make up for it, and that's kind of where the whole thing started.
Maybe a couple, just to be have it over here.
I had some interest in putting on a race up there. I had a restaurant, and I thought, we could put on a race to raise some money to help the park have a better road coming in. We don't own it, so it was just kind of like, hey, maybe we could do kind of a fundraiser type deal.
What race was that?
That was actually the 27. It ended up being the 2017 Ultra 4. We called it the Clash at Crossbar. So that was the first inaugural run, and really the reason that I chased getting the ranch contract in the first place was just I just wanted to put on a race.
And was that the year where it rained?
Yes, just a little bit.
That was the mud fest.
By a little bit, like 9.5 inches in 6 hours. It was a catastrophe. But
tornado.
We put on a race. Dave showed up, didn't know what we were going to do, and at the end of the day, we had a race. So we pride ourselves on that. And
heck yeah.
Well, I remember when I first met you, and we talked on the phone, and you said, "My goal is to have nationals, Ultra 4 nationals at Crossbar Ranch."
Yeah.
I said, good luck, because it's going to be hard getting it away from where was it?
Reno.
It was in Reno.
Yeah,
that's right.
That quarry that had the short course part.
Yeah, there. And I mean,
awesome facility.
That was
awesome.
A wonderful facility. Yeah, absolutely. It was just crazy.
Yeah, they actually ended up selling that. It was, a kind of a city lease out there, and the construction company, a new construction company, bought that lease, so they didn't want to run the off-road portion of that, so that shut that facility down. That's actually into that how we... how it came to be. Between COVID and them selling that, that's how we got nationals 2 years in a row. So we did meet our goal. We had nationals. And
yeah, so the backside funny story of that is that I was working North 4th at the time. I was on staff.
You were full time.
And so we're up there getting ready for nationals. And Dave calls on the radio and is like, "Hey, Trot, where you at?" And I'm like, "I'm over here doing whatever." And he's like, "Hey, I need you over here." That usually, you know, when Dave calls up, "I need you over here," he's like, "Oh shit, something's going down."
Yeah.
So I'm looking over there, get there, and Dave's like, "Hey, you're originally from Stillwater, right? Oklahoma?" And I'm like, "Yeah, what's up?" He goes, "This guy, his name is Justin Ramsey. He's from Oklahoma. I don't understand a word he says." So
I don't know what the hell they're talking about.
Like, "Hey, how you doing?" And he's like, "Hey, how you doing?" He's like, "Dave," he says, "hello, how are you?"
And I so you became the translator.
I was doing turf duties, but we kind of kicked off friendship from there. And then I was managing a 6100 team for Baja, and called him up and was like, "Hey, I need a navigator. Are you in?" And he was like, couldn't even get the words out of my mouth for him to get
so
it. Like, "I'm in."
And now we're married and comfortable.
Yeah, there we are.
No idea what I was setting myself up for, but loved every minute of it.
Yeah.
I like how you said nav guesser.
Yeah, nav guesser. Let's go over that way as fast as we can.
Okay. Are you sure? Probably.
Yeah. It looks like it'd be a race course, maybe.
Yeah.
So when did you guys purchase the ranch?
So we do not own it. It is a lease. We started that lease in 2017, January of 2017, and so we're right at a little over six and a quarter years now. So good relationship with the city. Things are.
Does the city own the property?
Yes, they do own the property. It's actually adjacent. So it's adjacent to Turner Falls, which is a city owned. A park, a natural waterfall, 77-foot waterfall.
Okay, I thought that was because I'm from this area.
Okay, yeah.
I always thought that was like a state park thing.
No, it's actually a city-owned park. Yeah. They manage it, and I tell you what, they're really doing a lot of infrastructure improvements right now. There's a lot of good stuff going on in Davis, America right now. I can tell you that.
Mm-hmm. And it's a beautiful area. If you've never been there, it's a very beautiful area. It is kind of unique that it's the Arbuckle Mountains are right there, and you drive through it and you're like, Alan's trying to fight the cat duty. You drive through it on I-35 and you go through these like really rocky hill sections, and they're what I was always told, they're a very, very, very old mountain range that has been slowly eroded, but it's there's a bunch of fault lines and stuff that go right through that area, and some cool ranches in that area, bunch of farmland, and then you just got these big rock sections that just kind of pop out of nowhere.
Yeah, tons of rock structure. That's what makes it so cool. You know, we've got some good open flat country. It's covered in rock, and it's hard, but we do have some flat, wide open stuff. But the rock crawling features that we have now, and then just what we have that's potential there, because there's just so much. The cedars cover up so much of it, but we have so much more rock structure grow. I mean, it's 6,500 acres. I mean, we are the largest off-road park in the central U.S. I mean, we're 6,500 acres.
And privately owned,
Yeah. So I mean, it's a big place. There's tons of growth potential. And I always tell everybody, in my mind, we're building the next Moab. You know, we have all the stuff in the area that Moab. It's different scenery, but we have some really good stuff down there. I'm excited what we're going to be able to do.
Yeah, and your big rock formation that's really popular right now is the Rock Face.
Yeah, that's our version of the boat ramp on Saturday afternoon. You know, people go up there and tear their stuff up. And
it's a very prominent feature. Yep. It's you roll up to it and it's unmistakable. There's not a whole lot of trees on it because it's just a rock face.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, I mean it's a pretty handy place to. You know, everybody congregates there. So yeah.
It's a great spectacle area. The spectator area. You can just sit there and watch them all day, just kind of like you do at Disney and you watch the Grand Staircase or Viagra. that's you guys' place, which is great.
Yeah.
And I know there's a lot more harder stuff in the back.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we're actually doing, you know, as far as our entertainment side of things, we've had a good friend of ours, Hunter Owens. He has a company called Laser Wolf Effects, and he started doing laser shows down there a few years ago.
Okay. Side by Side USA.
Yeah, I started doing that down about 2 years ago is when he asked to be able to do the first show, and he's just continued to make them bigger and better, and now we've gone into just having a whole event, and kind of Hunter, you know, reached out to us to put this thing on, and he's brought in, you know, next week, 2 weeks from now, the 28th and 29th, we have our hoedown, the crossbar hoedown. It's kind of a two-part series. We have a fall hoop nanny and a spring hoedown.
So, okay. Now, I remember an old Jeff Foxworthy joke, and he's like, you might be a redneck if you're at a party and someone yells hoedown and your girlfriend hits the floor.
Could happen.
I'll tell you what, the second Ultra 4 race you guys did, you guys had a live band up by the, I guess not the gatehouse, but it was right there, what used to be the gatehouse.
Yeah.
Yep. You guys had a big party there, and I'll never forget it. All the racers were down there. It wasn't the rainy one. It was the one after that. Yeah. That. And then what was really funny,
which was my first time there.
Was it your first time?
Yeah.
And it was so funny because the next day I was in a motorhome staying up at Pitt. And I remember driving down there and seeing everything. And that whole area right there where all the locals came in was trash.
Looked like a bomb.
Yeah. And then I went right back up to the Pitt. And all of the Ultra 4 racers, there wasn't a speck of trash anywhere. And that's I posted both of those pictures just to show that Ultra 4 racers and people in our sport, sport,
yeah.
We treat 100%. The land way better than what everybody thinks we do.
We use those photos to do a little bit of shaming.
Yeah. Well,
and it's because this industry, especially if you're really into it, everybody knows... as a kid, you know, I grew up around off-roading and always had either a subscription to some off-road magazine, or was buying it off the shelf at Hastings or Walmart or wherever I could get magazines.
We're all over 40. We're good.
And I'm not.
Oh, like, dang it.
I'm 34. What are you talking about? I feel like I'm 80, but... every magazine article had something about, you know, keep the land green and clean. And I forget, like Sierra Club would have cleanups on, like the Rubicon. There would be, what's some of the other cleanup groups?
Well, keep public lands public. That was one of the big ones that Lauren pushes. Uh-huh. Kurt Schneider is one of them that brings it up.
Okay.
And the reason why they do it is because they actually still have public lands in that area that they go wheel on.
Right.
We don't have that here in Central Oklahoma or Central America for that
matter. It's all private, but still, even on the private lands, property owners don't want to go have to pick up after everybody.
Yep. Right. Exactly. I mean, you know, ultimately they can run it, you know. Laying trash on somebody's property, eventually they'll get tired of it and close it down.
And that's happened.
I believe several places.
Mill Creek was one of them. Yeah. Right. That's why they quit. And it's not.
So the point I was trying to get is that, like, I grew up seeing all these things, like big articles on events that were just there to clean up certain areas, and learned that, you know, the reason this is happening is the areas that had public lands are getting shut down.
Yeah.
And the reason why a lot of times is they're looking at the easiest reason why, and a lot of it is because they're polluting.
Sure.
And that pollution comes from beverage cans, tires, anything you can think of, whole vehicles at some of these spots.
Absolutely.
That they're legit. Yeah.
Like, it's ridiculous.
They bring in big roll-off dumpsters and did not have room to put more in it because there's so much trash, and you see a couple little pieces of trash on the ground and you're like, okay, that's nothing. But all the times that you see all these little pieces of trash, if you were to pick all of it up, your rig's going to be full.
Absolutely.
I know that it for sure, because at Disney at the big meat run this year, I was picking up trash, and
they also had a big meat run cleanup run they do every year.
It was the week after.
And I'm sure they're going to do one at EJS after EJS. It'll be done again.
I think that's kind of the whole premise behind the gambler Series 2, right?
I believe so. You're right. You get to race, but if you pick up trash, you actually you probably gain points, I think, if they have that. I don't know much about the Gambler, which is very cool. I'd like to... We need to bring the Gambler
over here. Yeah, I've had a few people, you know, if anybody's listening. You know.
Sounds like Crossbar is open for business.
We are open for business.
They are willing to listen to ideas and bring in anything that may be fun and worthwhile to the park and the offered community.
Well, absolutely. And I've called him over campfire talks or sitting around the house, and I guess I want to get the Buzz the Red Dog back. Yeah. I want to get that back, and we've been talking about it. And if you don't know about Buzz the Red Dog, it's a two-day race at two different parks. You do it in 2 days. Yeah. And shortest
one
time.
Year it was. The other year it was the same park. But
I'm not doing that.
But it was technically two race courses because it was the same race course. Backwards. One was backwards.
Right. Different coursing.
Yeah, but I mean,
that's a different course.
Oh, it was. It was
those jumps suck going backwards.
Which I thought was great. Like the way KOH ran this year, they ran it backwards to try to level everything back up.
All the desert trucks ran one way on the desert section, and then Ultra 4 ran it backwards to try to keep it, bring it back more to normal. I would be curious to know what the results were of that.
I'm sure we can.
It's got good logic. I mean, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, you get a big hole and then you drive it across the other way, it's still going to be a bigger hole.
Yeah.
It might just have smoother edges on both sides.
Yeah, that's what she said. Okay.
Yeah.
But going back to Crossbar, you guys have the Hoot Nanny or the Hoedown coming up?
The Hoedown is the 28th and 29th. Actually, next week, first ever Jeep Jamboree USA. So we're kind of stepping into that world and trying to show Jeep goers a good time next week.
So at this time, would it be, like if we got a schedule for you, could we post that up on like the video of your schedule as you know it right now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
so Alan. More editing work for you.
Yeah, this is this is the 13th of the month.
5 days late.
I'll have this. Shut up.
By the 13th of another month.
Yeah. No, and it'll be out the 15th. So in 2 days.
Okay.
So. Jeep Jamboree.
Alan has a desk job.
Jeep Jamboree will be already passed by the time, or right at the same time. I'll have it out Saturday. Yeah. is when this podcast will go out. So Jeep Jamboree will be going on now. At Jeep Jamboree, do you guys have any? Emblem trails yet?
We do not yet. That's something that he and I have both. When the Jamboree they show up next week, we're hoping to start talking a little bit about maybe getting a few trail rated or
yeah, the trail rated emblems or whatever you know I'm talking about.
Right. If nothing else, just a park badge might be
absolutely
not too bad. You know, like hey, we conquered Crossbar. By that I mean you crossed the creek. Yeah, go to the entrance.
Right. Yeah.
Everybody that does know, you legit have to cross a water crossing to go to the park, which I think is awesome.
We're just trying to prep everybody when they come in the front gate that, you know, this is not your average off-road park.
You yes, know, you have to have a snorkel to get in. Just joking. It's not that deep.
Yeah, it's not that deep. I mean, my wife, Kim, has helped people in her minivan.
I had to...
Just follow me and cross the water. Well, like, really?
The first year of Ultra 4... We had somebody that were trying to hold down a tent, a race trailer tent, and he basically skinned his hand, literally de-skinned it, and you couldn't even get the dozer across it at that point. You had 9 inches. So
We tried. It didn't work. So.
Alan, then, you've never had 9 inches.
And then, I'll edit that out. But then the next year, or one of the other races afterwards, people were trying to get out, and one guy he got off the main course, and he had a stacker motorhome, or he had a motorhome with a stacker trailer, and he was low centered. The hitch was stuck. He couldn't get out.
Yeah, anchored.
Yeah, he was anchored. So we got him unhooked, and I hooked onto it with my F-150, and I was like, hey, I'll tell you what, I'll just drive up to the gas station with it, and then you can pick it up because it's way too heavy for my F-150, but at least I'll get it there. Okay. And I just did it and got it up there, and then he gave me $50. I'm like,
I'm going back to low water, make some more money.
But I've never had an issue crossing that in my little Jeep on 35s. Like it's like maybe like a couple inches deep usually.
I mean, it's one of those things. Now that we've actually just recently updated our contract with the city and put ourselves, I think, in long term in a much better position. That's going to allow us for some more improvements and things. And that's one of the things we're actually getting ready to start on that in about the next week and a half. raising the low water up and putting a cement base in it. So,
nice.
Okay.
So I thought there was already a cement base in it.
Well, there is, but it only takes up half the lane. So then,
gotcha. And that's how he fell off.
We just need to update it a little bit, and so that's what we're hoping.
What you ought to do is talk to Mr. Daniel Arms, which I'm sure one of you two know.
Does he have two of them?
No, he has an overhead bridge to go over his.
Yeah, yeah. You said Daniel Arms.
Daniel Arms is his name.
So does he have two of them?
Oh, yes. I was thinking arms like a gun.
Daniel Arm.
Actually, I know Daniel. I know of him, but I haven't actually personally met him.
Yeah.
He was coming out quite a bit. They unfortunately, I believe him and his family had a pretty severe accident.
Their son and daughter sold the four seater.
Yeah.
I mean, and if you guys have never seen it, look up Arms Family Homestead on YouTube. He's got like 350,000 subscribers, and I mean he showed a lot about the thing, but then he was scared of it. I talked to him and I was like, hey man, just because that one thing happened, and it was just a simple accident.
Yes, absolutely.
It turned out big, but everybody ended up being all right for the most part. But yeah, it was kind of scary, but he ended up selling that four seat Razor, and now he just does homesteading.
Yeah.
And it's really neat to watch. I've been trying to talk to him to try to get him to come on the podcast, but he's like, well, what are we going to talk about? Because you talk about off-road, and I don't do off-road. And I'm like, we live in the same state. I'm sure we can figure out
absolutely. Yeah. I think he's got a really cool platform. The homesteading is something that, you know, we all at the ranch have gotten more into now that we're out there all of the time. And I think it's really cool that he's put a platform out there to educate people with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he just bought a place in Mill Creek to make his printing area, like his own apparel merchandise store.
Oh, very nice.
And then he bought that's actually in Sulphur. I'm sorry.
Okay.
He bought the Mill Creek property just to hang out on and deer hunt, and then he bought the adjacent property as well. So now he has 160 acres square.
I see.
But anyway, that was just, something down there in you guys' area.
Oh, absolutely,
That might be somebody.
Yeah.
I was telling him to come out to the Nationals the last time it was out there, and he never got back with me on that, and so I didn't know if he showed up out there or not, but then he posted some videos of him going out there with one of his buddies. And of course, you guys know one of my good friends that I grew up with. He was my scoutmaster, Mr. Galen Walls.
I love him.
He actually has his own trail.
Yeah,
Walls Way.
Does he? I didn't know that.
He is the maybe the father of time. Maybe we should call him
Creepy Grandpa.
He's the father of time.
I know him.
Creepy Grandpa works.
I know him from before he ever had a side by side.
Really? Yeah. Back in his rock crawler days.
Yeah. Back Will and Clayton in his CJ7 or YJ.
It was a CJ7 that had been stretched.
Yeah, stretched and.
Beat to hell.
Yeah, it was beat, but it went everywhere. He had a Barbie zip tied to the front bar, and it was all like wind blown and everything. Reminded me of something from Mad Max. And then he daily drove an Exocage Jeep on like 35-inch
37s.
Nice.
Okay.
Yeah, well, 37s.
On Interco SXs, and he lived in Moore at the time by me, and I'd see him up and down the road coming from his pest control business, and I'd miss him like, hey, what are you up to, you know? Very, very cool dude.
Yeah,
if you were to see his vehicles that he drove and then talk to him, like, you would never think that he daily drove an Exocage XJ, which I think I saw at Big Meat Run, and a Jeep with stuffed animals strapped to it like you were torturing them. Just a very unique dude and very cool. And I knew he went to Crossbar a lot. I didn't know he had his own trail.
Yeah,
there.
Actually, they have their
area.
Yeah, they have their own area. It's Area 51, as we call it. But he's a legend among our staff and the six other people at Area 51.
Yeah.
Yeah. So is Area 51? It's not on the property. It's adjacent, right?
It's actually on the property. In a highly remote area.
Okay.
Right by main camp. But
you've got to have the password and the secret code.
I've driven by and I'm like, I think that's the trail there, but I'm not about to go down. It's like if you were in like middle of Alabama, down in a holler, and you needed gas, like you don't want to go down that road maybe because you don't know what you might run into.
Depends on time of day. Time of day, you don't want to run
Did you know, have you ever seen his classic cars that he has?
I haven't, no.
He has a 65 Chevelle wagon completely restored.
Really?
And then he has a 67 Chevelle that it's completely restored. He has a numbers matching motor, but he went ahead and put a big block in it.
Yep, nice.
And they literally most of the time sit underneath the tarp. Yeah. And then he's got an old Dodge panel wagon that he has sitting up in his shop that he swears he's going to rebuild, but we haven't.
One of these years.
It's just an investment.
Yeah. He's our river access, by the way. I was telling you.
Oh, okay.
Okay. All right.
He didn't tell us that. That's weird.
He got Shangri-La. I've used it before. Shangri-La Shores is what he bought. An old man had bought a place to subdivide, and he found out that it was in the floodplain of the 10-mile flats up here in Norman.
Okay, yeah.
And so he bought it for cheap on the dollar.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so he put up a lock and gate.
I've used it before.
Yeah, he put up a lock and gate. And if you have the...
There's a certain road that runs right into it, and like it dead ends into it. And
very cool.
In that area, and I'm not going to say what area because no one needs to know unless they know him. But there is a very prominent road that if you go far enough, it runs into it, and then if you have access, you drive straight through that onto a sand trail, and you're there. You're on access to a certain spot.
Yeah.
Yep. Starting to develop a pattern of creepy roads and walls
There's and not to bring attention to another off-road park, but I don't think it's competition to y'all. But there's an off-road park that opened in that same area of Norman.
Is it still open?
Happy Trails.
I've heard of that.
Mm-hmm. Is it still there?
I saw it on Instagram or Facebook. Saw a thing for it.
Okay.
Can you still hear? There we go. I don't know.
Press a button.
Dial. Oh, gotcha. But I noticed that, and I was like, "Oh, another place nearby I can go visit." But
that's river access, isn't it?
Yeah, they've got trails and stuff, and I'd rather go somewhere that's more diverse, like Crossbar, where if you want big, wide open areas, they got it. If you want some trees and some climbs, they've got it. I remember one of the Ultra 4 races I worked there. I found a rock garden. It had some trees around it, but it was a fault line that had come up, and it was down on the south side somewhere. Yeah. And I was like, man, that would be awesome for like a short little like rock crawling course, or even to cut across it. Because I mean, these rocks were jagged. There were deep voids in between, and all I could think was, I mean, imagine a side by side trying to go across that. Like it would just be like at Disney, the Bronco boulders that they have for the Ultra 4 race last year. It'd be like that, but in a more condensed and harder version. And in my head, I'm like, man, if I could just design a course around like those spots where you think it's going to be easy, but then you just run onto this stuff. And if you don't have your GPS and your co-driver set right, like, you're gonna hurt something.
I have a quick question, and I'm gonna prep something else here. But have you talked to Jake Good at We Rock?
Have not. No.
Have not.
Okay, we're gonna have to get you guys in that because I mean,
you know what We Rock is, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I'm sure that there's a place that we could put something in there, and I know he's looking for the closest place right now here in Oklahoma is Glencoe.
Okay.
And that spot's private, like really private,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
They only use it for that, or if you know somebody.
Now, is that Glencoe out west?
No, it's by Stillwater.
Yeah,
Stillwater.
That's where the Brown family, the Sub-Zero Buggy, and what's Thunderation, like they test there. They're from that up in that area.
Yeah, so anyway, I was just curious about that. So, all right. Tell us what kind of vehicles are able or capable of coming to Crossbar. And tell us your levels, like 1 through 5 on the trails. Are they labeled? That kind of thing.
So
I just don't want a stock Jeep coming out there and being upset because they can't do anything.
No, I mean that's one of the things I think that we have tried to do is make almost, and I say almost everything. We try to make as much accessible as possible by stock vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
We want to park that. Anybody can bring anything out and just have a good time. And some of those, I mean, you wouldn't believe how many paper tagged Audis we've seen come in the front gate. I mean, it just blows my mind.
Yep. I could see that.
You know, people,
they want space to be able to explore a little bit. And you don't have that in this area. You don't have mountain passes you can go drive. So your park provides.
Right.
That,
right? I mean, we're one of the only places that you can get up on top of them. We have about 400 feet of elevation change, so yep. You can get up over the top of the horizon, and you can actually see from the top of the mountain range. You can see almost back to Paoli, not quite Purcell, okay. But yeah. I mean, we've got, there's a good 30 miles.
So that's about halfway from
where we're
from
at.
From the park to where we're doing this podcast, yeah, at Noble. So if you look up a map, look up Crossbar Ranch to Noble, Oklahoma, he's saying that you can look visually with your own eyes halfway, yeah. Which is an hour drive, what, like 40 miles?
South of here, yeah. About 40 miles
about
south.
About 40 miles. So you got a 20-mile advantage.
Absolutely, yeah. We definitely have a high-point advantage. And that's just, that's just not something that's normal around here. You don't get those kind of views, it's just something that's, it's a small mountain range, but it's really unique, mm-hmm. And as far as the vehicle types, like I said, it's very, very diverse. We have plenty of people that bring their kids out on their four-wheelers and play around and their little motorcycles and stuff, and, do we have a ton of trail specific areas for them? No, but we do have tons and tons of pasture land and two roads that they can run around on. And then, what has still blown me away is, I don't know if you guys are very familiar with the adventure bike world.
Yes.
But that's something that's growing
a little bit.
Pretty substantial. I mean, there's a lot of people kind of getting into that, and we have a good friend of ours, Bill Dragoo. He has a school called DART, Dragoo Adventure Rider Training, and he's based out of Norman. He started training with us, or using us as his training location, within the first year that we opened.
Okay.
And it blows my mind. He'll have to do classes of, I've seen as many, I think as many as 30 at one of his classes, and some of them will trailer in, but some of those guys are bringing in their big BMWs coming in from Dallas. I mean, I've seen people. I actually had got introduced to one guy that was coming down from, I'm thinking he was coming from Oregon and heading to South America on his adventure bike, and he was stopping there to get training.
Okay.
Before he went further down, he felt good on the road, but now he was getting to the point
to focus
of
on some off-road stuff.
Get some off-road stuff. And a lot of guys, that we're that place where they can come stretch it out a little bit and kind of get a little bit of everything just to get ready to go somewhere on an adventure.
Have you heard of the Oklahoma Adventure Trail?
Not really, no.
So I found out about it a couple years ago, and it is a route around Oklahoma that is, I think, 75% dirt roads.
Oh, really?
And it was a adventure bikers, those guys you're talking about, that figured it out, and there's a map, there's a forum I had to go into, and they've mapped it out, and it goes around, pretty much around Oklahoma, and it's 75% dirt roads, and there's maps for it, and every time that somebody's gone through and they figured out, there's now a fence here or something like that, they've got marks, just like you would for like an off-road race, saying you have to jog around reroute. There's camping spots here, there's deep water here, stuff like that. And we actually did a short section from in my Jeep from just north of Davis, I think.
Okay.
I forget what town it is, or Davis area. I think we exited off at the exit for your park.
Okay.
And took it from there, got on the dirt roads, and went west to Lawton.
Mount Scott, and then you get out to Medicine Park. I have seen some of that trail that goes west out of the Medicine Park area. Uh-huh. It's actually on Onyx. I found some of that trail out there.
Awesome.
But I would love to see a lot more of that stuff marked off and have good information out there, because the overland.
The Oklahoma Adventure Trail is one, and I don't remember if the ranch is right off of it or not, but it could be something that those guys could add on to it.
Mm-hmm.
As far as, because there were a couple mile offshoots of touristy type stuff, or there's a camp spot here, there's a lake here, and add that onto yours, because if people are trying to do the whole thing in one trip, or like me, like eventually I want to do the whole thing, but I can't spend a week to go all the way around Oklahoma on dirt roads and do it in sections at a time. Then I know, yeah, hey, I can
take
camp
a weekend.
I can camp here, or I can pull off, and if I can only have 2 days, but I don't want to go that far. I could do this section, but then spend an afternoon at Crossbar doing a little bit.
You know? Well, absolutely. And the good thing about it is, are you guys still doing the joint deal with Turner Falls? Is that still a thing?
Yes, it is. We're kind of working through issues of just how to control some of it, mm-hmm, and putting in some new ordinance now.
Is that the access from the park side to...
Yep. And the biggest thing is, you know, Turner Falls is a very, very busy place, and you know, there's 6,000 people
when they come in.
You got to bring your sombrero and your tequila too.
Yeah.
So they'll take you in quick when you do that.
Absolutely.
Don't do that.
You know,
I'm just kidding.
You get a lot of side by sides coming into the park and not really observing the speed limits and things like that. So we're kind of fighting some of those issues, but you know, it's natural progression we're working towards, but it is available.
Well, what I was talking about is, at one point in time, which you guys were still working this out, is you can buy a joint pass to be able to go to Turner Falls and go to Crossbar at the same time.
Right. I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Yeah, you'll have a pass that gets you to both, but
especially if you have a family.
Still working on that, right? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Okay.
Biggest thing is right now it's easier to do it coming in the front gate of Turner Falls, but that is something that it's there. We're slowly modifying it all the time, and like I said, Turner Falls is doing a ton of infrastructure improvements, putting in bunkhouses with private bath facilities. They're putting in teepees. I think 6 or 8 teepees, and they're legit.
Yeah,
they're legit.
I want to stay in a teepee.
Oh, yeah.
And but they're also air conditioned teepees, so that helps.
So, yeah.
But
yeah, they're going old school.
So they're teepee-ish.
Well, they are an actual teepee. They just have a mobile AC unit.
Okay.
They actually went authentic and bought out of a tribe up in like North Dakota or somewhere. Mm-hmm. It's a really cool thing. So I'm excited to see what they're doing. They're shooting for like 30 miles of mountain biking trails, and we're hoping to work with them on horseback riding trails as well. So.
Wow, cool. It's going to be a one-stop shop, which
is
awesome.
Right. That's probably have stables there on site and everything.
Mm-hmm. Someday that's
awesome.
Yeah.
So,
let's go ahead and pause for a second. Guys, wait, we're about 45 minutes in, so I want to go ahead and stop.
So we got like 3 hours left. Okay.
We got to talk to the people that help us do this. My first sponsor, and one I went after from my first video podcast, was Territory Whiskey.
You were talking about them before it was a sponsor.
Yes.
Like, just hoping that maybe they'll catch on.
Sponsored them for a while.
Well, so. I did.
That's another point.
In fact, the bottle that we're drinking out of is one that I had bought.
is that the same bottle we've drank on this whole time?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, maybe. I bought 2 or 3.
Anyway, so it sounds better if you say
got
yes.
Like a fountain that you go back up and refill.
Exactly.
It's like a hot spring.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Man, like your growler.
No, but this is it's a brand new whiskey. It's been out. We're on our fourth batch, is what this is. It is a liqueur, cinnamon. What you call
pecan
it?
Pecan cinnamon whiskey.
Pecan cinnamon whiskey. I actually know the owner. He was going to come by tonight. Couldn't make it. They're out of Purcell.
Oh, nice.
Is it Purcell?
Yeah, they're out of Purcell, but it is bottled in Hollywood, Florida. The owner is Jamie Howard. Good dude. I actually met him at a tasting. And then he gave me this hat because I kept bugging him for it. Yeah. And
Was he wearing the hat?
Huh?
Was he wearing that hat?
No, he was going to give it away at the Hilltop up there in Noble.
Oh, okay.
And I said, man, I want the hat. And I said, I'll buy it. And Michelle went up and bugged him. And he finally said, just take it. And I didn't know that he was the owner. And then all of a sudden, I call him. I sent a message to him on Facebook. He's like, call me. So I call him. And he's like, hell yeah, I'm down. Let's do this.
All right.
So he hooked us up. You guys get a bottle
mm-hmm.
of Territory Whiskey.
Take a bottle with you.
Oh, darn.
And let's go ahead and taste it and give us your honest opinion.
Here we go, guys. Cheers.
Cheers to everybody, man.
Cheers to Crossbar and the success of Oklahoma Wheeling.
Thank you very much for the invite.
I like it. It's smooth. It doesn't have a bad after. Taste as Trot over here is
it's a little sweet and if you don't like sweet whiskeys you won't like it.
No,
it
it's actually
it's definitely not what I expect.
It's not as sweet as a Screwball or what's the other cinnamon whiskey,
the Fireball.
Fireball. It's not as it's not going to make you like go whoa at the end. It's a little bit subdued. I enjoy it.
Girlfriend mixes it with Sprite.
On in there,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
You mix it with Coke. It kind of tastes like a Tootsie Roll.
I bet you if you put some Dr. Pepper in it, it'd be like a peanut butter cup.
Yeah, yeah.
Which
yeah.
They say you do that with...
Screwball.
Screwball. Yep. But I bet this would be very similar. It's, get a chocolatey taste to
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's got that taste to it. Now, something I didn't tell you guys, and you guys are going to have to come back to me on. I always get something from my podcast guest, and I have it sitting here. Like, for instance, right over here is the 4681 of Mick Henson. He took that off and put a new number plate on. He gave me that. Right above Brad Lovell, I have not yet had him on, which he needs to come
yet.
On.
What the hell, Brad?
Yeah, what come the hell, on, Brad?
I'll call you Brad, don't worry.
And he gave me his rear bumper and Disney at Nationals.
You mean then, he departed from his rear bumper? Yeah.
I did. All right. And then, well, right here, this is something that I got when I was traveling with Derek West. He cased a jump on the last lap of a dirt rat race in Colorado Springs. Still got third place, but he cased the jump, and they had to cut this off to be able to get him in the trailer. So I picked it up off the ground and kept it.
Yep, and then you've got this jar of your own stuff, of your dirty dirt from where at?
Hammers. Yep. Every year I went to Hammers, I went ahead and put a little sand that got in my boot. And so every year I just add to that.
Suck the vents out of my RV. Yeah,
yeah. You'll have
just put it in a jar and put a good story behind it, you know.
Yeah. And the last one right here, I lost all my stuff back in, I believe it was 2014, 13 or 14, somewhere in there. I was a dumbass and I left the tailgate open and I took off and my whole box full of all my equipment, cameras, everything disappeared. And so I made my sob story on Facebook. And Lauren Healy said, hey, I got a GoPro you can have. So he gave me this GoPro. Since then, I've been getting him, because I mean, it's outdated now. It's a GoPro 1. So you can tell how old that is. I told him, I said, hey, man, let's sign it. And you sign it, and we'll auction it off or do something for good charity.
We've planned on here, once we get subscribers and it'll make it worthwhile, we'll do a giveaway and send that with a signed Lauren Healy historic GoPro, you know.
But we have one glitch in that.
And I think that is he won't sign it.
Huh.
Yeah.
Come on, Lauren, you're better than that, man. Come on.
I actually had my girlfriend go up to him with it at Nationals this last year. And she goes, can you sign this? And he'd never met Michelle. He went up and he looked at it and he started looking around for me. I told him I'd have a little kid come
like,
up.
Like look at that thing. It looks like something from an old, like a
sure deep, you didn't find that in the antique shop?
It looks like it came off of R2-D2.
Yeah.
The other GoPro I have sitting up there was given to me for the same reason. And that came from Mr. Travis Cook. You guys know who Cookie is.
Mm-hmm.
Cookie's a good friend. We've done Vegas Hammers. We've done all kinds of stuff. We did Vegas to Reno together. That was a blast.
Mm-hmm. So can y'all try to convince him to sign this for us?
Yeah.
Like when we had the Brown family on here, I tried to get...
Check this out right now.
I tried to get the boys to do like a feed the kids or...
Feed the children.
Feed the children. Feed the children. Like... Lauren Healy, if you don't sign this, we're all going to die of starvation, you know, kind of thing. And he didn't really understand, but I was hoping it would be like an awesome thing, and it didn't work out. But
well, I know Lauren's a busy man. I haven't gotten him to actually say that he's watched the podcast, but he may still
Vaughn.
Be sneaking around.
Hey, Vaughn.
Oh, that's a good one.
Vaughn, get him to sign this, and we will have you on the show. Like, it'll be a privilege for you. You know,
we can figure out how to do that.
We will provide you an outlet.
I'll tell Vaughn. I'll tell Vaughn.
Trot's over here like, oh yeah, hold on. I've got an invitation to their Easter party.
Since we're talking about, you know, we're still talking about Hammers guys and Ultra 4 guys. I was up the last time I was at Hammers, there was I guess it was a Pro Light, but he said it was yours. It's a Pro Light that had like a medical thing on the back of it.
So
can you explain the history of that vehicle?
So that started as a Pro Light. And then the owner of Spitfire basically purchased it for his sons and his son-in-laws to start racing. So that's working with Spitfire. That raced at Vegas to Reno. You know, they're pissed off racers basically. But so that's how that car started. Then another friend had bought it, and working with the active duty guys, you know, they're wanting to kind of present a different mobility platform.
Okay.
And, okay, well, cool, we've got this short little condensed package. And he's like, well, let's make it a four-wheel drive. He's like, well, okay. And the previous owner had, he's got engineers stacked in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, basically, we had a training going on in about a month and a half. He took it up to Oregon and said, all right, guys, here's the deal. I need this car back to me fully functional in a month. So they converted this little Pro Light into a four-wheel drive, extended the bed, put gurney, put basically recovery equipment, put front and rear winch. It was on little 35s, but, I mean, it was just a little crawling neat machine.
That was, I saw it at the compound. It was sitting at the compound, KOH 2021, I believe.
Right, right.
And I said, I think this started as a Pro Light.
Yep.
Because I got to drive a Pro Light at Vegas Off-Road Experience at SEMA one year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Turtle Wax brought me there. And it was the exact same frame and everything. And I'm like, that's a Pro Light. That's badass.
So for those of you who don't know, a Pro Light is a short course off-road truck. So think of like
two-wheel drive
motocross, but with a truck like the old Mickey Thompson races.
Yep.
And it's originally it was a four-cylinder engine truck-based platform.
Yep.
And now it's evolved, like they have like a spec LS engine, but still it's based off of a small truck, like a Ford Ranger size.
Right. Usually it's a mid-engine, isn't it? Or is it front?
No, they're front.
It's
They're very restricted as far as like a tire size and suspension and engine. But the fact that you took one of those, because they're very compact, they're not a spacious vehicle.
Right.
You know, and made it four drive.
Mm-hmm.
It's a
bad mobile.
Honey
badger.
Is it at cross bar?
Badger. New.
No,
it's still an Andrews, isn't it? Is it
another individual had picked it up.
So. Oh, okay. So now it is not in your ownership.
Right.
Okay. I would say that would be awesome to be like, hey, we need a band aid at Rockface.
Right.
Hold on, I'll be there in a minute.
Yep.
Okay.
Be there in a minute.
Oh, shit, you made it in 40 seconds.
Now, I have another question. Remember the first weekend that you guys opened after COVID?
Mm-hmm.
I was there with Jay Aiken. And
technically, we never closed.
Oh.
Well,
Jay Aiken.
No, it's Aiken.
No, I pronounce it Eakin.
He's going to get mad at you.
And I hope he knows, because he needs to come on the show and bring his car.
And Donnie Kellenbeck, I was there with them.
Okay.
Friday, we showed up, and we took off to Rockface, and we hit a ditch, and Donnie Kellenbeck in his Comanche pickup 4600 car, he got stuck massively bad. The next day, on Saturday, we came out, and that hole was gone. Did you guys fix it?
That's probably the boat ramp.
Could have been.
I mean, it's almost, it's just the easy drive to Rock Face.
Yep.
Yeah. We have one spot. We call it the boat ramp, but it tends to get a little bit rugged out and get pretty bad.
We drove back out there Saturday, and we were giving Donnie shit. We're like, hey, man, you think you can make it through since you got stuck last time?
Yep.
And we show up, and we're like, where the hell did it go?
He's like, oh, if you don't see it, it didn't happen.
Right? No, I was just checking to see if you guys maintain that road to Rockface on purpose.
Yeah, I mean, we pretty much have to. I mean, it's...
it's just that one trouble spot.
Because there was no other trouble spots, but that one, Donnie got stuck in.
Yeah.
And...
We've kind of continued to try to open up some of those roads more or less for, you know,
access,
egress and emergencies. And the cool thing about Crossbar is it's so rough that it keeps our speed somewhat in check. I mean, it just beats a machine up and kind of keeps people slowed down a little bit, but you have to go through and clear line of sight with all the cedars and things. So that's we don't really try to take out the rock. We just move the cedars out of the way and make people drive over that. But it definitely, we don't have a lot of just people flying around.
The main road. It is definitely not like dirt roads. Even on the south side where it's flatter.
It's rock.
It is rock based. Like, you might have some dirt, and I did this to myself. Like, oh, I'm going to open it up a little bit, and then you run across like a I keep saying fault line, but it looks like it's a ridge of rock that comes through. And
looks like tombstones.
Yeah. You just rattle your teeth to death, and then you're hoping you don't pop the tires.
Yeah.
But I had a neighbor that had a Nissan Xterra. It is the front had been lifted a little bit, I think torsion bars, and they came down for a couple hours with me one day to Crossbar, and he liked off-road vehicles and never been to an off-road park, so we both drove down from Moore.
Is that boat ramp?
That's right.
Drove down there and went into the park, and it was him, his wife, and their two kids, or actually three kids. I have two daughters and a little boy, and we drove around the north side a little bit, and I'm in my JK that's just on 35s.
We interrupt this program because Lauren just replied.
What did he say?
So Lauren Healy just responded, laugh out loud, not for Hitch. So I asked him, hey, can you sign a GoPro? And he's like,
we asked him if we'll do it for a couple of veterans.
Yeah,
that might be better. Yeah. Yeah, you might get away with it.
This cat will die if you don't sign, all right?
We will sacrifice this cat in your name.
That's so funny. But he didn't even ask who it was. Not for Hitch.
Yeah, not for Hitch.
So does that mean that Lauren's listening? I don't know. I hope so. Or if there's at least word getting back to him, somebody's listening that is in his circle maybe.
No, he texted him. He just said he was texting.
I know, but he knew. He said not for Hitch.
I bugged him about it for 5 years. All right, now.
Well, hold on. So... my buddy with Xterra, he got around everything everywhere fine before they had to leave, and he was like, man, I wish we could stay longer. But we drove in front of Rock, up from the entrance, like around up to Rock Face and around by the deer stand, like the hunter stand.
And
they loved it. And this is a, other than like a torsion bar crank, stock Nissan Xterra.
And that's
he's driving around and is kind of surprised at like some of the things he's climbing, which to me, you know, I grew up around this. I kind of know what to expect as far as seeing like, okay, like I should be able to do this and shouldn't. But somebody who doesn't have experience doing that, like a simple climb to me might seem like they're climbing Mount Everest. He's following me and it was like texting me like, dude, I don't know. And it was really nothing crazy. It was like a little trail through the trees with some loose rock and maybe like a little boulder in the middle of it. And his XJ on 33s, or not XJ, sorry, Xterra, maybe on 33s, probably maybe more like 31 and a halfs.
Right.
Went right with it. No reason why anybody should be afraid to come down there, because if you have some common sense and can look at what you're driving towards, you can get all over that place, I think.
You sure can. I mean, that's, and again, I said that earlier, that's kind of the point. You know, the hardcore rock crawlers and, you know, the buggies and things, we want to get those and we love those. That's what, you know, that's where our passion is. But
that's a limited crowd, right?
It is. I mean, we want something for everyone. I like the overlanding community as much as I like the hardcore, you know, the racing and stuff. They're a great community and they want to be able to come out and test their vehicles, but not tear them up. You know, I've got a JL that I've got a rooftop tent on, and you know, we take it all over the park. But it's also my wife's daily driver, and I don't want to dent it all up, smash it all up. But you know, there's enough diversity there to have some good hard climbs that are wide open, that don't have trees all over them, that we can do that. Or if we just want to go pasture wheeling and do that, we can. Or if we want to go find a place out in the middle of nowhere, you know, I use this. I mean, What to rationalize the size of our park, Ardmore is the closest city that I live in. You know, we're just,
and Ardmore's a,
it's pretty good size, 30,000, 35,000.
And the size of the town, it's kind of spread out.
It's kind of spread out.
It is a good sized town.
You can fit Ardmore in the ranch.
Okay.
So
I didn't know that, and I'm familiar with that. I have family that live down there, and I've my whole life been at sporting events as a kid down there and know the size of it. I've never pictured that, and that's pretty crazy.
It's pretty crazy. You know, people complain about not having enough trail signage and getting lost, and you know, which me, and I kind of think that's the point. That's why you're there, go out there and get lost, maybe. You know,
if you know north and south, in my eyes.
Surprised.
But okay, if you at least know where north is, like, you drive back north, you're eventually going to come back to the little shack where you sell drinks and stuff, and the entrance, because it kind of, and from what I know of it, kind of funnels you into a specific area.
And it's taken a long time to get there. You know, the Ultra 4 thing has helped a lot of that, because we built so much trail and
burned in trail.
Yep. I mean, it really helped us establish how the park flows and functions and things. And, you know, we've had to learn all that. We didn't take over the park as off-road professionals.
True.
Took it over.
Most parks are developed by off-road professionals.
I mean, just from history, I started out with Southern Missouri Off-Road Ranch before it was owned by Brandon Powell.
Okay.
I started it with another guy, and it was way too hard because no trails were cut, and the trails that were cut were hard as hell.
Right.
So then what we decided to do is, I told him, I said, hey, why don't we make trails for stock guys? And that way my club, because I was part of Ozark's Jeep thing at that point in time, I was like, my club can come out, we'll do a stock run, and we'll promote your park. So that's what he did. He made that, and that stock run was a mess.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't made for stock.
Yeah, you have to learn what a stock can actually do.
And the cool thing is I'm actually seeing kind of the same growing pains that you guys are going through right now, the same that I saw Brandon Powell go through. And I mean, and not to mention, I mean, he's got he had for a long time one of the most premier off-road parks in the nation, because I mean,
heard lots of good things.
Oh man,
I have not been out there yet,
as far as amenities.
Let's not even
put Mid-America in that category right now.
Yeah, Mid-America is Disney World.
Yeah, exactly. I'll edit that out. Southern Missouri was the nicest park. He had some good stuff.
Yeah.
And then, and of course he had his father helping. He had a big crew helping and everything else. But he only had 930 acres.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You can only wheel on it so long.
That's right, man.
And, I mean, I wheeled on it for 5 years. Yeah. He left my Jeep out there for years. Yeah. But,
well, they also have a curfew.
They do, and that's something you guys
Crossbar
don't have.
Crossbar does.
We do not.
So, I personally love night wheeling. And it's not for anything other than the dark kind of hides some things, and it seems to be like when you go back in daylight after you climbed a trail, you're like, wow, I climbed that.
Yeah.
Like it, and this is taking out the liquid courage, because I've done it fairly sober, and I've done it
fairly drunk,
rarely not sober. And in both instances,
you should always be sober while you're waiting.
Yes. Drunk driving is still drunk driving even if you're off-road, but it helps if you have a helmet on and a roll cage and a harness that is properly installed and used. I hate seeing people with harnesses and the lap belts are around their belly button and the shoulder straps are loose as crap.
Yep.
But night wheeling is a whole nother adventure.
It is.
And I love it. And there are a lot of parks that don't do it for specific reasons, like drinking and the potential risks involved with it. But overall, the same trail during the day and the same trail at night are two different trails.
Absolutely.
Here's the thing. We all talk, take it how you will, but we all have talked about the hammers and how awesome it is, and I 100% agree the race is fantastic, but there's 70,000 people there. If they couldn't night wheel, do you think they would all stay there for 9 days at a time?
Not at all.
That's the thing. That's why it's always been important. I mean, that's for me, I don't have time to wheel during the day. We got to work.
Yep.
Right. So that's just kind of always been the time we've had to do
it. I think the same thing is like up at Disney. Now that they've been racing up there, it changes day to night. During the day, like I've worked two races up there now, BMR and Nationals last year, and every day we have to come back and have to put some banners and stuff back up
right.
because people are wheeling at night.
Mm-hmm. It's a big thing.
They're trying the obstacles that these unlimited Ultra 4 cars that cost upwards of $500,000 are going up. And they want to see if their XJ on 33s can go up that same climb. Yeah. And I think if you allow that openness and are willing to take that little bit of extra work of, okay, we have to put up some banners, or let's move this barricade so because we know people are going to be here, then you turn around and go back and put it back up the next day. You keep those people there. You keep those numbers up because it's not just sitting and watching.
Right.
You're actually able to wheel the same stuff.
Yeah. Right, right.
So I have a question. What is the history of that property? Because to me, it looks like it used to be a state park. The camping areas, like for hookups, have concrete pads. Mm-hmm. There are some bathroom houses that look like a state park to me. And I've always been curious on before it became an off-road park, what was it and why? Because y'all didn't build that initial stuff.
No. We didn't actually open it as the off-road park. We actually took it over once it was running. We just saw an opportunity to help it grow. The city of Davis didn't have a key driver in there that was really in the off-road world. Yeah. So that was kind of where we came in and just, started pushing the off-road
side. Was it still called Crossbar?
It was called Crossbar. Mm-hmm. So it's historically, it's actually a functioning cattle ranch. It was dating back to the early 1900s. They ran roughly, it was 6,500 acres. It was actually bigger than that. It had divided between the families and things, but functioning cattle ranch, ran as a ranch up until I think the mid to late 90s.
Okay.
Early 90s, and then the city of Davis actually purchased the ranch for really the sole purpose of growing Turner Falls. There was a portion of the ranch known as Pasture 9. If you're, a town lingo, it's Pasture 9.
Far south side?
It'd be the far southeast side. So basically, when you're going over to Turner Falls, the last section of land that you run on, about the last mile, you're actually popping onto the portion that they really were focused on just so they could extend Turner Falls further up Honey Creek.
Okay.
And that's, that's the aquifer that feeds it. So they... And then they turned around and just leased the rest of it out for a number of years. But over time, the Cedars started taking over, and there's just a lot with that mountain range. You really have to manage it on controlled burns and things.
Yeah,
and,
because if you can't manage the trees, it takes over grassland.
Yes.
You can't have cattle feeding off of cedar trees.
Right? They didn't. Right. Yeah. Goats will eat cedar, but.
I mean, yeah.
But, that's been part of the fun of it is just. It's great to go out and off-road all the time, and we do it every single day. And you're like, wow, this is cool. But it's actually, I have as much fun, I think Trot does too, just managing the property and trying to hold a little bit of the history that was there. Because, it was a functioning cattle ranch for the last 80 so years of its life. Is actually the Butterly family, the ranch house that's there was built by the Butterly family.
So Taylor Sheridan should make a show based off this, right?
Well, 100%.
Yes.
Even before it became a ranch, it was in the mid 1800s is the first place in Oklahoma where they discovered zinc.
Yeah.
Actually, so there are that I know of, we know of.
There
are
15
mine shafts on that property.
Yeah.
Now, are those mine shafts? Is any part of it potentially could be accessible for tourism or exploring?
There'll
be a separate way.
That is a whole new thing I never thought of. And I love watching people explore all mine shafts and go caving and stuff like that. And that's a potentially whole nother avenue of anything that. This is a revelation to me, and I think that's awesome.
Yeah, there's actually the entire Arbuckle Mountain Range is just covered with caves. I mean, if you talk to the right people around, there's tons of them that are marked that they don't. Mm-hmm. They're on private property. They're the biggest thing is they don't want people just going off in them because they do. There's a lot of water in that mountain range,
mm-hmm.
and those caves can go from completely dry to completely field overnight. Mm-hmm. They, you know, so they're saying
well, like and that's not to mention the air issues of walking into a pocket of methane or something.
That's right.
And mm-hmm. not knowing, not having the equipment or not knowing where you're at and getting lost. And once again, this is all stuff that I've learned from just watching YouTube of these guys. Like they've got oxygen monitors and
got a canary on their shoulder.
They're looking for old maps to know, like, just have an idea of what they're walking into. But that is crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah, okay.
The rancher beside us says that it's not uncommon that he'll see a chopper flying across the ranch and drop down and then pop back up, and they're dropping spelunkers off at a cave hole, and then they'll come back hours or the next day and pick them up.
You need to monetize that.
Yeah, no joke.
We will provide the access to it with off-road vehicles, but you're going to pay a premium to go underground.
Yeah, you got
to
know where it is.
And if you break down $5,000, then we'll pull it right out like that.
We know exactly where you need to go. The access is you're going to pay for our access and our ability to get you there.
That's right.
And we will unlock the hatch, and 12 hours later, hopefully you're at the surface.
Or maybe we won't.
Yeah.
Depends on
whether or not you're
if your Cash App came through.
That's right.
Might want to send that now.
Yes. Well, guys, we're at about a minute or an hour and 15 now, so let's kind of wrap it up. Man, what do you want everybody to know about? This will be released on the 15th.
Okay.
So, I mean, Jeep Jamboree is going to be done and gone for the most part.
Yep.
What do you got coming up in the near future?
So, after Jeep Jamboree next week, the next major thing we have is the following weekend. That's our Crossbar Hoedown. I talked to Hunter today, 33 or 35 drag racers, and he's got some solid. I mean, there's some 600 horse X3s doing four foot weenies.
So you say drag racers, you mean like dirt drags?
Side by side drags.
Yep.
Side by side drag
racers. Truck in sand.
Truck in sand. Oh, okay. Paddle tires.
I grew up sand drag racing, okay. So that I did. Once again, another thing I didn't know. I love that. It's like a redneck drag racing, but I like it because there's dirt involved.
Absolutely, right. And I mean he's gone legit. I mean I think drag races, he's got like $15,000.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
As a payout, you know. I mean,
does he have a series name?
Huh?
Does he have a series name where people could go? And
he does not yet.
Okay.
Side by Side USA is where they can find all the information.
Okay. Side by Side USA.
Yeah. He's got CA Tech in sponsoring on this.
Hey, which is a big, both of those are big side-by-side companies.
Absolutely, yeah. We actually, CA Tech's marketing director is
I could use some Polaris 170 parts if anybody
anybody listening out there.
that's our next big thing.
It'll be side-by-side drags.
Side-by-side drags, and then a side-by-side Bounty Hill as well down on Rockface on Friday. So the drag races will be all day Friday, or during the day on Friday night, drive-in movie night down at Rockface.
About 14. A drive-in movie?
Yeah, okay. So live stream down at Rockface. He brings in a projection screen, everything. He's a laser video.
Oh, it's the guy you were talking about earlier.
So,
okay, right.
He'll do that on Friday night. Saturday we'll do the bounty course, and then Saturday night we'll have live music back at Rockface and do a laser show. And,
okay.
So he puts on a really, really fun show.
You know who's playing yet?
He's got a pretty solid cover band coming out of the Oklahoma City area, but I apologize, I cannot remember.
Well, in the future, and I'll get with you after this, I do have a local guy that plays primarily out of state and he's great. I watched him at the Wormy Dog open it up for another big Texas country artist.
Cool.
And he doesn't play in Oklahoma much because he says they don't pay for it. But I'm like, I think you need to look at other places.
Yeah.
And so every time I come across, and it seems to be off-road parks lately, because those type of people would like his type of music, mm-hmm. and would enjoy that and not be just disappearing in the middle of the crowd. And because he's a local guy, I think that brings another thing to it.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And then, okay, so that's Friday, Saturday, nothing going on Sunday.
It's nothing Sunday. I think we're going to do probably maybe an organized trail ride on Sunday.
Okay.
And then after that, you guys are open on Every weekend, right?
We're open every weekend. The only time we close is actually during rifle season, rifle season, Oklahoma.
Which would be October, basically.
We're actually last weekend. It's the weekend before, the weekend of, and the weekend after Thanksgiving is the easiest way to say it.
Okay.
So just give you guys an idea. We're closed during that time. But
you're open during the week?
We are open during the week, yep.
And 7 days a week, you guys are
7 days a week. We have people on site. We do
24 hours a day.
24 hours a day. And, you know, we're at the tip of the iceberg on what we feel like we're building out there. And we've got tons of things that I think over the years we're just going to continue to get better and better. Racing's something that we are a recreational park. That's what our purpose is. But racing is a passion for us, and we love to be a part of it, and we want to bring more of it. We've been talking to a few guys about doing some other than, you know, Buzz the Red Dog. We actually have another friend of ours, John Goodby, out in Sacramento.
NorCal.
We would really like to TVRA bring that format, that short course rock racing format.
Because so is this like kind of hinting at the future?
Mm-hmm. That's every chance we get. That's what we do.
I know. Earlier this year, before King of the Hammers, y'all had a desert racing like testing weekend.
We actually have another one this weekend.
That's right. Okay.
We have some, and that is some of the guys with the Tejas Desert Racing Association,
yep,
out of West Texas.
Yep. TDRA.
They've reached out to us and are just wanting to see if they can start doing some practice, and hopefully we can develop a loop. You know, we have to develop a two-wheel drive loop,
yeah,
and that's something that's a little bit more of a challenge for us, but it's there and we can do. But that's something that we hope to start bringing, and
that's awesome.
You know, hopefully one of these days we can get the big cars back. The, you know, the 4400s are our passion, and
we'll
and
get there. I guarantee we'll you. We'll
we know a guy.
Yeah, yep. We kind of know a few guys.
Yeah. even if it's not with Ultra 4. Yeah, that mustache.
Hey, but you know what? We might.
You want me to call JT?
What?
You want me to call him? Mm-hmm. See if he'll answer? Well, the reason I say that is last time I was here, he was saying something. I can't get a hold of JT, so I called him. He answered right away. And he's in the background, like, what the hell? How is he answering your calls? I was like, I don't know. I mean,
you know,
I guess I'm cooler than you. I don't know.
No, it's because you're a brother. That's what it is.
Oh, he ended up telling Alan.
It's not
like,
your skin color. It's your brother.
Well, he told Alan, he's like, well, he's one of my soldiers. And I was like,
right.
Oh.
That's right. Makes a difference. I understand.
It kind of hit me in the heart a little bit. You know? Oh, First Sergeant Taylor. He likes me.
Yeah.
But so how does anybody get a hold of you at all? I mean, like, not you, but Crossbar Ranch.
Yes.
So call our main number. Yep.
Social media.
What's the main number?
What is it? Like, where? What social medias?
You're going to make me
book of faces.
Yes, we are.
Gramming of instantly. And, you know,
so instantly gramming, book of faces.
Yep.
And is there a Twitter
website?
Do you guys have an OnlyFans yet?
We do not yet.
Not yet, but we're hoping that comes through.
Hey, honey, I'm going to need you to do some modeling coming up soon.
So our main line is 580-247-7244. That'll reach out to Kim, and she can pretty much answer any question anyone has. So,
and what is the website?
Crossbarnet.com.
Mm-hmm. Crossbarranch.com. Crossbarnet?
Crossbarranch.
Crossbarranch.com.
No, crossbarranch.net.
Okay, well, he kind of went.
We got it. Crossbarranch.net. We've had a few beers and a shot of whiskey, so guys, bear with us.
Whoever's running these sound cards, you know, are horrible. I can't read anything on them.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, hello, Biden. Anyway, never mind. All right. Well, other than that, guys, thanks for hanging out with us.
Absolutely.
You guys will at some point in time have to add something to the package for us, and we'll put this out on the 15th.
Perfect.
And that'll give you guys, hopefully, let's get a whole bunch of people to cross.
Maybe we can get another jar, but
for crossbar?
Just crossbar.
That's just going to be mud.
Yeah.
Maybe rocks. Rocks. I'm good with rocks and water.
Yeah. I can find one small enough to stuff in that hole.
So I would hope to, in the future, maybe be able to do a park tour on video.
I think that'd be a must.
What do you think?
What tour?
A park tour on video.
I can definitely do that. Let me, because we can do it with your Jeep and my buddy's side by side. We can do it without.
Well, and I'm sure they have vehicles that are.
Oh yeah, we've got. Trot's got the newest, latest, greatest vehicle. We did not bring that up. He should mention.
Oh, pretty soon. Yeah. So what do you have? I had the fortunate opportunity to purchase it as it sits, but it's a 1948 Willys Jeepster on a Scout 2 frame. So it's got a 5.3 in it, and
that's not a Scout engine.
Wait, right. The green one, the panel wagon?
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that new purchase, but
All
right.
And the old timer that built it is an old school rock crawler. And
okay.
It, I mean, it's
it works.
I'll have to tell you the story later.
But okay. I'm down for that.
We can definitely. Yeah, we are professional tour guides.
Okay.
So I would love to be able to like expand on what we just did, but in person.
Not a problem.
And I actually hope to do it before this and have like B-roll footage in the background. The trip didn't happen. I was telling them beforehand because it's. I remember as a kid watching. We always ran to Colorado and stuff, and there were like a couple old guys that you'd go to these touristy shops, and there'd be like videos of. Running the trails into the mountain towns and stuff like that, and narrating everything, and like to do a modern version of that, but specifically for a crossbar, so people can see exactly what they're going to go into and know that, oh wow, this is just a JK with a truss axle, open differentials, and 35s. I think my Chevy Colorado can do that.
And a lot of people don't understand is that, you know, crossbar has such diverse terrain that, yeah, you can test your skill set and you can test the platforms.
Yep.
Without banging it up too much.
Hey, man, I'm completely down for that. You and me in 2 weeks are going to Texas.
Yes.
And then I got to go to Tulsa this week.
Are you ever going to come to the
No, they've got the hoop.
Unfortunately, we actually tried to schedule around Tribe's Crawfish Bowl, but we
just
ended
do
up
do the Crawfish Bowl at Crossbar next time.
We'd love to. We actually just got back from the shop Tuesday afternoon.
Well, you are wearing a Tribe 16.
I am. I love what they do.
Do you know where the 16 comes from?
I think it's a number of friends that got involved with it.
False.
Okay, I don't know.
From what I've been told is Adam used to do car audio, and he had a guy come in and wanted some 16s installed. And he's like, what are you talking about? And ended up being the size speaker and... 6x9 What was it?
Wait, I don't remember it. I don't remember a 16. I remember
4x4
Hold on. It was he wanted 6x9, so he was like, I want them 54s. I want them 54s. And Adam's like, I don't know what you're talking about. He used them 6x9s. He was multiplying the 6x9. So 4x4 is 16. 4 times 4.
You got there. Finally got there, buddy.
Well, I had to remember. Sorry.
The K is silent.
Yes. So gotcha. The Tribe 16 is Tribe 4x4, but multiplied.
Yes. 4x4 is all it is. That's the simplest thing.
But the backstory on it's pretty funny is I want them 54s. And you're like, I don't know what 54s are, you know?
Listen to Mickey Thompson. But anyway, guys, we're pretty much going to wrap this up. We're right at an hour and 30 minutes. And I appreciate
Justin
hanging out.
We really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Oh, man.
It only took three years to get
man,
here.
Everybody knows him as Trot. His name is Brian Trotter. He's actually, I actually probably want to do a podcast just with him because Joe Rogan won't take him. He's
boring.
Make sure you run it. Make sure that in a dark alley at night you have him by your side.
Yep. And these are two good guys. You'll see either one of them at the gate at Crossbar Ranch. And other than that, guys, go see Crossbar Ranch. Go to crossbarranch.net.
Davis, Oklahoma.
Davis, Oklahoma. Go find it on Facebook. Do you guys have an IG?
Yep.
Crossbar Ranch on IG. Go check them out. I want to link all this in the show notes and also on the YouTube channel. And hopefully both of these cameras worked. Every time I did it, they worked.
And the cat didn't bump into
anything. And the cat only bugged us once. He threw him off once. So we're good to go. Guys,
Lauren Healy, the cat was sacrificed for you.
Yeah. And Lauren Healy, we still need you to sign that.
Yes.
Guys, this is Hitch. We'll see you on the trail. Later. See ya.